call to order the Senate Committee on General Government, Consumer, and Small Business Protection. Colleagues, today is Monday, February 20th, 2012. We are convened for a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 4046 and House Bill 4150. My intention today is to not move House Bill 4150 because it needs a -3 amendment evidently, but we will go ahead and get the public hearing portion done, and we'll potentially move 4046 as well, assuming we've got everything ready to go for that. So that being said, I will open a public hearing on House Bill 4046A. Jan, could you tee it up for us, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, committee members. This bill exempts certain accident-only policies, specified disease and hospital indemnity insurance policies from payment of the assessment on gross amount of premiums. It's effective September 29th, 2013. There are no amendments. There is a revenue statement that's been issued and a fiscal statement issued, and there's no subsequent referral.
All right. Who do we have? Scott Berry and Elise Brown, please. Welcome to the committee.
Great. Thank you. Good morning. Scott Berry on behalf of Aflac this morning, testifying in favor of House Bill 4046. Back in 2009, House Bill 2009 and House Bill 2116 were passed, creating the Healthy Kids Program and the funding mechanism for that as well. Throughout the entire session, that was defined in terms of the premium tax, the 1% premium tax, as health benefit plans right up until the very end of session, literally the last few days and hours. And there were some changes made that brought in some of our supplemental policies. The bill you have before you today originally pulled those three supplemental policies out in July 1st of 2013 at the end of the biennium. We have since added a small amendment in the House, changing that to the 29th, that removed the, for all intents and purposes, the fiscal impact by placing the effective date one day before the tax actually sunsets. And our intent with that was that moving forward, if this tax continues on, we did not want to be continuing on with it. And for a number of reasons, and I think the chief one of which is that there's no real nexus here between the supplemental policies included in these three supplemental policies and traditional health insurance. With traditional health insurance, you have a situation where the kids that are now in the Healthy Kids program were basically getting their health care through the emergency room health care plan. Their they get sick, their parents are taken to the emergency room. That's a very expensive way, as I'm sure you all know, to get your health care. Those costs were then passed from the hospitals to traditional health insurance companies. Through the Healthy Kids program, those costs are now saved in terms of the kids having insurance, getting traditional health care from a health care provider, hopefully not using that that emergency room health plan, if you will, and thereby passing that savings on to the health insurance companies. The supplemental policies are over here, a lot like a workers' comp policy. You fall off the roof and break your wrist, you can't go to work for a few days or a few months, and that supplemental policy pays you. You're able to use that for daycare for the kids. You're able to use that to buy groceries. You can frankly do whatever you like with it. You can take your kids to the movies or buy a car. It has nothing to do with paying providers or hospitals as a traditional health insurance company or plan would. Our policies also don't increase. Therefore, that 1% cost could not be passed on. They also can only be canceled by the policyholder, not by the insurance provider. So once you have the policy, it's yours until you decide you don't want that policy any longer. We saw no opposition in the House Healthcare Committee. It came out 7-0, 57-2 on the House floor. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Elise, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Shields and members of the committee. Good morning. Elise Brown, representing America's Health Insurance Plans. I'll refer to it as AHIP. And I am here, happy to be here, in support of House Bill 4046. AHIP has had a longstanding position that premium taxes on health plans to fund other medical care is not good policy. It's rooted in the fact that affordability of premiums remains the number one concern, and taxing the very item that we're attempting to make affordable is counterproductive. In addition, we believe that there should be a nexus between those assessed and the purpose of those funds, as Scott just addressed. That said, AHIP was neutral on the original agreement, House Bill 2116, which was codified in House Bill 2009, and we were not signatories of the Memorandum of Understanding that was negotiated. We did have certain plans that supported that, and we had other plans that didn't, and therefore we were neutral on the agreement at the time. We did, however, raise concerns about the long-term need to identify appropriate funding sources that were sustainable, transparent, fair, equitable, and had a nexus to the public programming it was supporting. We emphasized the sunset of the 1% premium so that the funding would be assumed going forward, but the immediate need to fund healthy kids would be addressed. We believe that this bill is a reminder of that agreement, and the current assessment should sunset, and we'll look for a new funding source as we develop going forward. Thank you, and again, offer our support for this bill and ask that you pass it. Thank you.
Questions? So just to clarify, well, let me ask you a question, Scott. Do you know about how much you've been paying in the 1% premium tax or your policyholders have been since Healthy Kids was enacted?
Chair Shields, I would estimate, and it is an estimation from talking to just Aflac, and so with that, I have to sort of guesstimate on the total amount, but I would guess it's less than 1% of the total funds that go in, so it's a percent of 1% under $1 million, from my understanding.
Under $1 million?
Correct.
Is that your sense as well?
I believe so. I'd only be speculating, Chair Shields.
Okay. And so, again, this will not have any revenue impact or fiscal impact while Healthy Kids is in place, but then Healthy Kids sunsets June 30th, 2013, and then we're putting into statute the understanding that you moving forward will not be included in any type of continuation of this kind of program. Is that right?
That's correct, Chair Shields. September 30th is the date it sunsets. This bill pulls us out on the 29th. I think, you know, ideally we might have come out earlier, but understanding where this budget process is and the amount of funds and the sensitivity to funds and funding issues, we moved our date to I reflect that, let's put it that way, and that's exactly right. Going forward, the idea is that we wouldn't be included if, for some reason, the tax is extended.
And I think, you know, also there's, because we can't tie the hands of future legislatures, there would not be nothing that would prohibit us from saying, you know, we're going to reconsider that and bring you in with the next round. So I think this is just trying to, from your point of view, send a message moving forward that this is where you are in the negotiation should this type of taxing mechanism be continued in the future, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Good. Any questions? All right. I will... Does anybody else want to testify on this bill, by the way? Okay, seeing none. I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 4046 and open a work session on House Bill 4046. Senator Rosamond, would you make the motion?
Yes, thank you. Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 4046A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Rosenbaum has moved House Bill 4046A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Would the clerk please call the roll?
Senator Boquist.
Aye.
Senator Dienfelder.
Aye.
Senator Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Vice Chair George.
Excused.
Chair Shields.
Chair votes aye. Motion carries.
So, Jan, are you happy? I didn't. Larry left, so I couldn't do the minority report. I'm sorry.
Plans were dashed.
To expand it to self-employed firms, provider tax. Senator Boquist, would you like to carry this?
Oh, I'm delighted, as long as one of these lobbyists give me a cheat sheet.
Senator Boquist will be the carrier, and I will close the work session on House Bill 4046, and I will
voted no under the minority report.
Open a public hearing on House Bill 4150. Jan, could you tee it up for us, please?
Hi, Mr. Chair, committee members. 4150A expands the definition of qualified business as eligible for the credit guarantees from the Credit Enhancement Fund to include non-traded sector businesses. It establishes a sunset date of July 1st, 2015, declares an emergency effective on passage. There are no amendments. There is no revenue impact. There's a minimal fiscal impact with no statement issued. And it's our understanding that a Dash 3 amendment will be coming to clarify the definition of qualified business and how it relates to distressed areas.
All right. Representative from the Emerald Empire, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the welcome. For the record, State Representative Paul Holvey from House District 8. And I really appreciate you getting this keyed up. House Bill 4150 is coming to you. As a bill that is going to help small business across the state of Oregon. As noted, there is a technical amendment yet to come. I'm hoping it'll be out today. But I'll just briefly give you a synopsis of what the bill does and then hand it over to somebody who can talk more specifics than I. House Bill 4150 basically expands the definition of qualified businesses that are eligible for the Credit Enhancement Fund through Business Oregon. Currently, the Credit Enhancement Fund is designed to help traded sector small businesses and businesses in distressed areas. And so it, as we're seeing this economic recovery moving forward, it came to light that there are funds are available through a federal program, the Small Business Initiative Credit Initiative, and those monies are, you know, restricted by our current Oregon statutes to those traded sector and distressed areas. And it is of concern that we may not be actually able to use all those funds with that restrictive definition at this point. And the other point is that we have several counties around the state that are coming off of those distressed area rolls by definition. And as, you know, we're looking at trying to maintain the momentum of a recovery at this point, it seems wise that we would temporarily remove that restriction of just strictly traded sector and distressed areas to allow the wider use of this area to small businesses around the state. And that's essentially what this bill does in a nutshell. And certainly the Credit Enhancement Fund is used to help supplement private community credit unions and banks in loaning money to and providing capital, the access to capital to small business. So that's the gist of it in a nutshell. I think it is a bill that will help create jobs in Oregon, and I urge an aye vote when that amendment gets to you.
Chair Shields, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paul Grove with the Business Development Department, Business Oregon. As Representative Holvey noted, House Bill 4150 is a straightforward proposal that allows the Credit Enhancement Fund to partner with banks and guarantee loans for non-traded sector businesses across the state. The fund provides loan guarantees to those banks to increase capital availability to small businesses, and as a representative noted, it's been traditionally used to support those financial institutions, community banks, credit unions, to provide loans and working capital to traded sector companies. But it has also been used to provide loan guarantees for non-traded sector companies in distressed areas. Not that long ago, the entire state had been designated as distressed, and we'd seen an increase in the program's use and availability for other opportunities that had presented themselves. The proposal is temporary, but it also coincides with the infusion of federal money that we had received through the State Small Business Credit Initiative, and that's $16.5 million, $10 million of which has been dedicated for use in this program. So the time is right. It helps the state and helps the department also meet those federal leverage requirements as well. I think it's a 10-to-1 leverage match that we're looking to meet. And we're talking, you know, there had been some question about the role of the program and would this change the nature overall. And have John Saris with me, who can talk in greater detail as to our portfolio, the types of activities and loans that we're engaged in. The fact of the matter is the primary purpose will still be a traded sector, but this allows the state and the department to take advantage of opportunities that present themselves moving forward here in the short term. So with that, I'll yield to John Saris, and he can talk in greater detail.
Chair Shields, member of the committee, my name for the record is John Saris. I'm the business services manager at the Oregon Business Development Department. I believe that Representative Holvey and Paul Grove did a great job explaining the bill and the impacts, and I actually will probably defer to any direct questions you may have about the program and try to answer those as best I can for you.
Senator Dingfelder.
Thank you. You talked about a 10-to-1 match. So is that actually matching money from the state, or is that from a local community or the partner that's going to be receiving the loan, or how exactly? I'm not familiar with the fund, so how does that work?
Chair, members of the committee, great question. So the 10-to-1 match basically is a requirement that we leverage $1 of federal funds with $10 of private lending activity. And so in this particular case, what will happen is $10 of credit union or bank lending would be extended to small businesses across the state that are eligible as a result of this activity.
And then follow up?
Yeah.
And as far as the federal dollars that are available, was that one-time money? I wasn't sure if it was under ARRA, or is that something that's going to be renewed at this point?
That funding was a one-time funding. It was part of the 2010 Small Business Jobs Act of the federal government that extended. The state was allocated $16.5 million, and those funds are to be leveraged and meet the leverage requirement by the end of December 2016.
Okay, and one final follow-up. Is there any state matching fund, or is it mainly just through our administrative costs for the program?
Chair, members of the committee, we currently do have state funds available in that program. There are lottery funds, approximately $7 million or so of lottery funds that are in the program and are currently leveraging loans that have been made in the past.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Senator Dingfelder. Anyone else?
Mr. Chair, thanks. I had a question in a similar vein. I assume that those funds don't get depleted if the loans are paid back, since it's just a guarantee. So do you know is there a track record yet, or is it too soon to tell in terms of what the rate of default on these loans is and how much money is still available?
Chair, members of the committee, you are correct. Those funds are leveraged at the time that loans are made. The historical default rate on the program has been less than 2% since inception in 1991. Over the course of the last decade, it's been a little bit lower, but at this time we are starting to see a little increase in the number of defaults just based on the economy, if you will. So the program has been self-sustaining since it was initially capitalized in the early 90s, and this infusion of federal funds would help to extend the program.
All right, thank you. Well, one question I had, in my district, we have a fair amount of, I'd say, closely held manufacturing companies that aren't necessarily trading internationally, but may well be within the spirit of what a traded sector is. For example,
a lubricants or a chemical company that only sells to other companies in the States. Would they meet the definition of a traded sector? Tell me a little bit more about how traded sector is defined, and are we teeing up that definition in ways that only support big business versus small, or tell me a little bit more about that.
Sure, Chair, members of the committee. So by how you describe the business there, typically that would be viewed as a traded sector company. What we do is we look at the goods and services that a business provides, and we look to see whether or not those goods and services either are traded outside of the state or potentially would supplant other business from coming into the state and filling the needs of providers of services and goods. As far as the types of businesses that are typically supported, the average business that receives a credit enhancement fund loan guarantee has fewer than 17 employees. So this really is targeted at your small businesses and small manufacturers across the state, as you mentioned, closely held companies.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Representative Reed, would you like to give some testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Tobias Reed, State Representative from District 27. I'm honestly here just to support the fine folks who've been here before me. We had a chance to travel around the state and hear from businesses and community leaders in the process of developing a bill that I hope will be before the Senate before long. And what we heard is very consistent with what I think this bill tries to respond to and connecting capital with those who are growing Oregon businesses. So I don't need to take any more of your time, but I'm just here to support the bill and hope you'll move it forward.
Great. Thank you very much for bringing it to us. All right. Seeing no other testimony, we're still waiting on the dash three. This will give us something to do on Wednesday. However, we will be meeting on Wednesday at 9 a.m., not 8 a.m. And I will close the public hearing on House Bill 4150, and we are adjourned.